Brian, and thank you for the rest of the committee for inviting me and giving me a chance to present some of the research I'm doing in my lab. I realize this group is pretty heavily focused on the micronutrients, and I'm glad to see that I'm not the only one in this that's going to talk a little bit about protein after Philippa's nice talk. So I'm going to talk about my work trying to characterize this quality protein maze, which has been around for a long time. Let's move on to the outline. So I'm going to tell you what some of the things we've discovered about quality protein maize in the last few years since I've had my own lab, and this work goes back to my work as a postdoc. In introduction, I'm going to talk about vitreous endosperm development and protein quality in a more general context to set the stage. And then I'm going to talk. The bulk of the talk is going to be about insights on opaque two modification. That is what makes quality protein maize and what quality protein maize is, and using this deletion mutagenesis platform that I've developed in my lab. And then just right at the end, I'll tell you a little bit about a new platform using the B73 maize reference background, which has more general functional genomics applications. So just to set the stage, I want to tell you a little bit about storage proteins in maize, and some of you may know this, but for those who don't, most of the proteins in the maize endosperm are these zeaprolamins, and they're stored in layered structures called protein bodies, which remain attached to the endoplasmic reticulum. And most of the protein in the maize endosperm is these zeaN proteins, as shown in the SDS page. And the zeaN proteins are essential for giving the grain hardness, which obviously is an essential property in corn and, for that matter, in other cereals that accumulate prolamins to a high level. Now, the disadvantage of this high accumulation of a relatively small number of proteins is that they determine the nutritional content of the grain in terms of protein quality. And the zeans are deficient in two essential amino acids, lysine and tryptophan, so which has obviously serious consequences, especially in developing countries who rely on maize as a staple protein, and especially when other sources of protein are limiting. So the opaque mutant was a potential way around this limiting protein quality of maize grain, and the opaque 2 mutant was discovered a long time ago, almost 100 years ago, actually. It's one of the first mutants to be described in maize. And it was characterized also a long time ago in the 60s and generated a huge amount of interest for its increase in these two limiting essential amino acids, which essentially make opaque 2 a complete protein source. So this can be used for monogastric livestock. It can be used for weaning children off breast milk as a complete protein source. And so normal maize grain has this large, thick layer of vitreous or glassy endosperm around the outside. Opaque to the vitreous endosperm is completely gone. Okay, now this mutation results from a single recessive gene mutation in a transcription factor called opaque 2, which regulates alpha zeans especially, but this is a pleiotropic mutant, so it also regulates a number of other unrelated genes. And that underlies one of the disadvantages of opaque 2, is that it has a pleiotropic phenotype. Also regulates a central carbon metabolism enzyme, pyruvate PI dikinase, which is very important in the switch between protein and starch accumulation in glycolysis. So that is one of the major pleiotropic effects of opaque 2. So I've always been interested in ways that we can potentially do the same thing as opaque 2, but avoiding the pleiotropic effects. And that's one thing that that this approach can potentially do. In reducing the proportion of zeons, which is shown here in the opaque 2 mutant, the proportion of non-zeons through proteome rebalancing is increased in opaque 2. And these non-zeon proteins collectively confer a better balance of essential amino acids. So it was fairly quickly realized that opaque 2 was not going to be the revolution that the human race needed, because there are a number of negative agronomic traits associated with the opaque 2 mutant, and the kernel softness is just not acceptable. So it, then shortly after that, in the 70s, the breeders, largely in working at CIMIT in Mexico, discovered modifiers of opaque 2. So you could basically restore the vitreous phenotype while maintaining the high level of lysine. And this was done without the aid of any kind of molecular markers as we have now. And it's complex because the opaque 2 mutation has to be maintained in a homozygous mutant background. And once you get the wild type phenotype back, it's easy to lose that homozygous mutant because you have to select at the biochemical level. So there were a lot of lysine measurements were done. And you have to select for multiple unlinked and, for that matter, unknown modifier genes. So that's been a central part of my interest, is to try and understand what these modifier genes are. So what do we know? What does QPM look like, or quality protein maze? Well, it has low alpha zeons because it's an opaque 2. It doesn't have the opaque 2 transcription factor, or it's non-functional. Low alpha zeons, just like opaque 2. It has higher non-zeons, just like opaque 2. Which is why it confers the increased lysine. But interestingly, it has this higher accumulation of this one species called gamma-zeon, okay? And that's going to be central to a large part of what I'm going to talk about. So we've suspected for a long time that this gamma-zeon is an essential part of opaque 2 modification, but the evidence for that was a little sketchy. So one of the things which really started to nail this down, that this was in fact a modifier, that gamma zeon was in fact a modifier, was that when we, through collaborative work with Jo Messing's group at Rutgers, we knocked out the gamma zeon with an RNAi and crossed that into a QPM background and then abolished the modification. In terms of mapping these modifier genes, I'm not going to go into this. There's been a number of studies done, including work in Brian Larkin's lab, where I was a postdoc, which I was peripherally involved with, which identified major QTLs on chromosome 7 and to a lesser extent on chromosome 9. And depending on what trait you're actually measuring for, be it vitreousness or density or hardness, these are actually separate traits. You can see other minor effect QTLs dispersed across the genome. I did a lot of candidate gene analysis, which I'm not going to talk about, which attempted to find candidate genes within these QTLs, and I've published quite a bit of that, so I don't have time to talk about that today. So what are the important questions that I'm focusing on? Well, first of all, what creates the vitreous endosperm phenotype, and how do protein bodies form in wild-type maize? Well, this is more general from the biological interest. I'm interested in how this process actually happens. And so I study opaque mutants and characterizing what those gene products are and how they work. I've also done quite a bit of work dissecting the non-redundant and redundant functions of the zeons in protein body formation. It's always been assumed that the alpha zeons are just hydrophobic and in the middle, and the gamma zeons are just surround them. But there are a number of different versions of gamma zeons and alpha zeons, and we've found that they're not all, that they don't have entirely redundant function. There's quite a lot of specialization in the roles, especially of the gamma zeons, which I'm not going to go into. So I want to talk mainly about work we've done to find out the nature and mode of action of the OPEC2 modified genes using this gamut deletion mutagenesis platform. And also this has potential to directly create lines with actually deleted prolamins, which is a way of potentially getting around the pleiotropic effects of the OPEC2 mutant if we just abolish those genes entirely. So let me briefly run through this platform that I've been developing over the last few years. So I did this when I first started at my own lab, and this was done on a pretty small scale, just really to try and see if it would work. And I basically took a QPM line, and I had it treated with gamma radiation. Took it through the this was fairly substantial amount of work, and then it balloons out because in the next generation you have to grow a whole row for all of these. Okay, so you get about half of them germinating after the treatment, and then you screen the M1 ears those directly for dominant mutants, and then the main screening for recessive starts in the M2 ears. And so we can use these opaque revertants of QPM to identify QPM genes through BSA mapping and Illumina sequencing approaches. So how am I doing on time? 8 minutes left. Okay, so what I want to do is just highlight a couple of the mutants, one of which we've characterized in quite a lot of detail, another which is coming to, we still have quite a ways to go, but we have quite a lot of data on it. These are mutants 107, line 107 here, and line 198. So line 107 was one of the first ones that we kind of started getting really excited about because it appeared to have the 27 kilodalton gamma cyan completely deleted. And so this was the only gene that we knew by that stage that were pretty much for sure was an OPEC2 modifier. So it kind of validated that it was worthwhile doing this even on a small scale because, you know, we hit the main OPEC2 modifier just even in a small population. So what you can also see, what we saw, was that it also seems to lack the 50 kilodalton gamma cyan. And as it turns out, and we verified this with genomic PCR, so the 16 kilodalton gamma cyan, which also functions in protein body formation, was normal, but the 50 and the 27 were completely gone. And through some work we'd done a few years ago when I was a postdoc, we know that the 27 and the 50 kilodalton gamma cyan are right next to each other on chromosome 7 within that QTL region. What we did in the first phase to characterize this mutant and a number of other ones that we're working on was exon capture, so whereby we took the genomic DNA and we ran it over a NimbleGene chip to just pull out the exon regions of genes as a way of simplifying the sequencing target. And through basically comparing Illumina reads between the normal unmutagenized line and the mutant, we can see that in the deleted region we have pretty much zero reads in the mutant. And so we were able to define a region of about 1.2 megabases containing a number of expressed genes. Okay, we also did RNA-seq, which I'm not showing here, which basically confirmed this, and genomic PCR and RT-PCR to confirm these. So one of the things, I mean, it's probably occurred to you that this is a large deletion. There are a lot of genes in here. One of the things we're most interested to know is, do all the deletions look like this? The literature on radiation mutagenesis is pretty sketchy in terms of the heterogeneity of mutants. And there's literature to suggest that actually there are a number of much smaller deletions as well, which obviously, if that's true, that makes this much more useful for functional genomics. So right now we're doing sequencing on on a number of B73 lines to really get to the bottom of the range of different mutation sizes. So this line 107, what we noticed in segregating M2 ears was that it's not a strictly 3-to-1 ratio of normal to mutant. There's approximately a quarter which are fully opaque, and then we have about 50% which are kind of somewhere in between, looking like this. And what we discovered is that after we knew what this deletion was, we were able to determine that these were hemizygous, okay, which shows that one copy of gamma zein is not sufficient for full modification. So this is called haploinsufficiency. Okay, you have half the amount of gamma zein, half the of 27, and half the amount of 50, and semi-modified kernels. Okay, so this mutant, because it has lower gamma zein than normal QPM, that actually increases the lysine content above that of QPM. Obviously, you're bringing opaqueness back in, so there's a trade-off there. But what's interesting is if you take these semi-modified kernels that have potentially a usefully a hard enough phenotype, you still have an increase in lysine over regular QPM, almost back up to a normal, completely unmodified opaque 2 levels. And this, although you know the tide is against transgenesis right now, this raises the possibility that we could reintroduce gamma zein back into these gamma zein nulls, but do it in a way that we've engineered gamma zein to contain lysine. So can we affect modification with this artificial gamma zein at the same time as putting even more lysine back into the kernels? This haploinsufficiency, by the way, does not apply to normal vitreous endosperm development in wild type. We know that because we crossed this deletion line back into B73 wild type, and in a couple of generations we could get back to normal wild type opaque 2. So we have the gamma zein deletion, but in a normal opaque 2 context. And what we can see is that when we have half the amount of gamma zein, we know this is hemizygous because there's a PCR assay to test this. We have normal vitreous kernels. So one copy of gamma zein is sufficient for normal vitreous endosperm development in wild type, but it's not sufficient as a modifier. We did immunogold labeling. So QPM affects modification by having a much larger number of smaller protein bodies than wild type. And in the deletion line, what we see is a very much reduced number of protein bodies that have no gamma zein. Okay, and this supports some earlier data that suggested that gamma zein is the species that initiates protein bodies. So without gamma zein, you have very low initiation of protein bodies. Just very quickly, one more line. This has a low amount of 19 kilodalton alpha zein. 19 kilodalton alpha zein is not directly regulated by opaque 2, like the 27 is. So this raises the possibility that we've either created a direct mutation, a physical mutation in a 19 kilodalton alpha zein family, or we've identified a novel regulatory factor that does a similar job to opaque 2. But remember, opaque 2 does not regulate the 19 kilodalton alpha zeins. I'm going to have to skim through this pretty quickly, but this line is another line which increases the lysine content over and above that of QPM or unmodified opaque 2. The expression of, we measured the expression of all the alpha zein subfamilies, so there's a number of genes in each of these alpha zein subfamilies, including the 22 kilodalton alpha zein, and they're all reduced. So this suggests that it's a more general effect on all alpha zeins, not specifically the 22 kilodalton alpha zeins. Basically, we did genomic, which this is a little hard to interpret because we're having to use primers that are that are family-specific, not individual gene-specific, because the genes within these four, these different alphazine subfamilies, are too similar to design-specific primers. So these data are not completely conclusive that we don't have a physical deletion. We've done a lot of southern blots, and we've never been able to detect any kind of deleted bands in total alphazine southern southern blots. We did BSA mapping with the Iowa State University facility, and I identified a very strong peak on chromosome 3, which really goes, is just kind of the final proof that this is not a physical deletion in alphazine, because there are no alphazine subfamilies on chromosome 3. There was a second peak in this because in the mapping population you have opaque 2 now segregating out. So you've got two. You've got opacity caused by this gamma zine deletion, by this alpha zine effect, but you've also got opacity caused by opaque 2 itself. Now, fortunately, these mutant these phenotypes look very different. So it's possible to make the mapping pool pretty much excluding opaque 2, but not completely. And we did get two peaks. But opaque 2 is on chromosome 7, so we're pretty sure that this is opaque 2. I'm not going to go through that. We have a number of other QPM deletion mutants, and what the reason we're excited about these is because they have partially modified phenotypes, and these all have normal gamma zine. So these might be ways to get a handle on some of the other genes involved in opaque 2 modification. I didn't leave enough time for this, but this is our B73 platform. This is much larger. This is from a more general functional genomics context, looking at seed mutants in general. But again, asking the question, can we knock out some of these alphazine subfamilies and create directly improved lines like that? And this is the platform we're using for that. We're now moving away from the exon capture approach because this line 198 that we did exon sequencing and we're not able to find any deletions, so we think we might have knocked out an intergenic regulatory factor. So we're now moving to a more full sequencing approach using HiSeq, combining that with RNA-seq and BSA mapping and proteomics as well. These are the Ling Wang. This was a graduate student who did the bulk of this work I've described, and Chi Sang did the bulk of the bioinformatics. Sorry for running over.
Take one question. Is that the individual only found in chromosome 7, or is it the community that they can find more patients for the line?
In this line, in line 107, there was a smaller deletion on chromosome 9, much smaller deletion. Now, obviously, if you're going to do this, the reason this flies is because we already know a lot about the biology of gamma zine. If you want to do this for clone genes that you really don't know less about the function, then you've got a lot of reverse genetics to do. You've got to complement your mutant. You've got to get additional alleles in order to prove it. But in this line, there was one major deletion and then a much smaller one. We don't know about very small deletions because this is a non-reference genome background, so our sequencing resolution was not really high resolution. That's part of the reason why we've now gone to B73, because any sequencing we do is directly comparable to the reference genome.